Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, September 15th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
I just don't like this year, 2015. Here it is, the year is almost over, and it's just doesn't flow, you know, off the tongue.
I'm not worried about the year. I mean, the century. I have some complaints about the 21st century so far. But
2016 is just a much easier 2014. It's 2015. Anyway, gold today was down 320. Not bad. 11.06.20. Silver's doesn't know what direction it want to go in. 14 to 51, but it is off its low of 14.20 on the day. So a nice little turnaround from the low anyway. Platinum was up $9 at 967. Palladium was up 15 at 607. The USDX today was a little stronger, 95.62, up 0.38. Crude oil up 6.7. at 44.67. Paper markets today must be reading. Maybe they received some inside information as far as what the Fed's going to do, but it had a heck of a day, up 229 points, 16,600. The NASDAQ up 15 at 48.60, along with the S&P up 25 at 19.78. And let's see, 10-year yield 2.28%. up 0.10. The euro down a little bit, of course, 1.13 still. And all the world markets are fairly unchanged overnight. No big moves in any direction. So the biggest move has been the stock market, the Dow Jones, our markets. They were all up over 1%, with the Dow leading almost at 1.5%. And there was a couple of reports that came out today. Let me see if I can bring that up here real quick. Naturally, the one that I wanted was not the one that came up. But with the magic of
a hand crank for your computer.
Yes, pretty much.
Got that coffee grinder effect going on here, folks.
I just don't want to learn everything about the computer. Anyway, the U.S.
Well, it doesn't
factory,
matter. You couldn't.
No,
you couldn't. I can't.
Hey, did you see where McAfee, remember the computer?
Thinking about running for president?
Running for president. And I actually saw his announcement. It's called the Cyber It's called the Cyber Party, and he's going to do everything online. You know, it's going to be a everything online.
It's
called the
Cyber.
And I listened to his video as far as when he was making the announcement. And if I didn't see who was speaking or didn't know who was speaking, you know, it was kind of interesting. But when you know his background and, you know, he's a, you know, I'm not sure. I'm not judging. But certainly, you know, I don't think he's one where I would want to see as president. But, you know, he said all the right things. And, you know, he really did. He's the only one that he's more concerned about cyber protection. And, you know, he believes there's a cyber war going on. And, you know, he's concerned about our own personal privacies. And he mentioned much the Constitution and about our forefathers. And so it was... interesting statement.
I understand. I think, you know, and I think he's onto something, and I've thought about it myself for a while. It's entirely possible, inconceivable, that you could create a third party on the Internet at virtually no cost other than your own, you know, whatever time and energy it costs you to put your website together. But in theory, if you had the right set of ideas and you could attract people, and if you got lucky and it went viral, you could create a third a party without having to hold any meetings, right? Without the expense of driving to meetings or buying hats and the rest of this sort of thing. And all of a sudden, when November comes around, you have the election. He might find out, oh my gosh, we got 60 million people in a new third party. It's entirely possible.
Well,
and McAfee is going to explore that possibility, and that's fascinating to me.
Although I saw an interview with him after his announcement, and I don't think they gave him fair, you know. Of course, does any mainstream interview give any person a fair deal? And but he was a little rough, you know. I mean, he did look like he was up for 48 hours, and you know, he did look a little rough. But you know, hey, can't judge a book by its cover.
I understand.
But he certainly has had his problems, and he explained a lot of those problems. You know, living in a third world country, and you know, they don't do things the same way they do here. And you know, and it's true. If they want to interview you, they don't interview you. They, you know, strap you up in the heels and hang you from the ceiling, and you know, then they ask you your questions. But interesting. But U.S. factory production posts its biggest fall in 19 months. You have auto output drop sharply. You had the automakers cut back production in August, and which they usually do sometimes in the summertime. So it showed that the overall factory output is a weak spot right before the Federal Reserve meeting. Manufacturing production dropped 0.5%, and that's the biggest decline since January of 2014. And the drop in auto output accounted for most of the decline. Production of computers, airplanes, and furniture also fell. And now you have manufacturing is posting the weakest sector of the economy. And, of course, they can blame that on the stronger dollar and maybe weaker global growth. They can also blame it on China if they want. Auto production plunged 6.4%, and that was its steepest fall in more than 3 years after its big gain of 10.6% in July. They say auto sales are still on track to top 17 million for this year. And I guess you could look to China a little bit as some sort of a critical source of demand for American-made machinery, like mining trucks or, you know, construction equipment, that type of thing. And if they slow down, you're naturally going to have a little bit of a slowdown on sales here for, like, companies like Caterpillar and United Technologies. So, you know, for whatever it's worth. But this is what I found is interesting. General Electric said today that it may move about 500 jobs overseas because Congress did not renew a government program that allows foreign companies to borrow money to buy U.S. products. And, of course, that is the U.S. Export-Import Bank. It was not approved to renew by Congress, and so they had to stop lending July 1st. Now, the idea was this was supposed to be attached to the transportation bill. I guess it hasn't been. And so now, you know, these foreign companies that use this agency to buy expensive U.S. products, when bank loans are not available, they're moving their jobs out of the country. They're overseas. And so GE says 100 jobs from a Houston plant that makes gas turbines will move to Hungary and China in 2016. The Fairfield, Connecticut. Well, that was GE, said that these countries have lending options in place for customers. Another 400 jobs could be created in France instead of factories in South Carolina, Maine, and New York if the company wins projects it is bidding on. So here's another way in which the U.S. is losing jobs. Now, I don't approve of the Export-Import Bank. I mean, I don't approve of that, and but we're just seeing more jobs leave this country.
Yeah, the whole thing is tangled up. I'm curious, from my perspective, is why is it that the government has to lend money to foreign corporations to buy American products?
Man, you're talking GE here.
I understand. Why didn't GE do some financing?
Yeah. Hey, there's
sure
a zero rate loan
financing if I want to buy one of their refrigerators.
Which doesn't make sense. There's zero rate loans. However, what does make sense is because if these do not succeed, guess who's responsible for the loan?
If they profit, guess who gets the profit?
Yeah.
Not us.
Not
if
us.
They fail, guess who gets the bill?
Exactly.
We do.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what's wrong with it. They socialize the losses and they privatize the profits.
Yep.
And they are creating, if you can borrow money from the government, you can get... you might be able to get rich, too.
And it's not taking them long to get rid of these jobs. Hey, they're leaving by 2016. This is GE. It is just so bizarre. And if anybody thinks that there's a chance that things will work out, and that's when you see Trump, too. Trump's fun. He's exciting. He could shake things up. But he's still an elite. He's still a multinational leader he's part of it. So, and I don't think this country, and when he talks about deals, that's what upsets me. It's not about deals. When you make a deal, that means you have to give something away too. And I think we should stop giving things away. I don't think deals should be made. I think this country should be made to be strong, and then we get to choose who to do business, and no deals are allowed. So making deals, that's what bugs me the most about Trump. I'm a deal maker. Well, you know what?
In the real world, there's deals that are being made. I mean, there's compromises on all the bills. The Republicans compromise with the Democrats. They're cutting deals all the time.
Yes, but
Trump's background, it isn't going to hurt him. But the only thing about it...
These deals shouldn't be made. The government shouldn't be run on deals.
Well, here's the thing about deals. In the final analysis, most of these deals, they certainly involve compromises. That's just part of the art of the deal. I've never read his book, but I'm sure that most deals ultimately involve compromises. And they're finally all about the money. And that's one of the dangerous things about our government right now. There should be some core principles that you don't deal away, like God-given unalienable rights that are declared in the Declaration of Independence, second sentence. The things that you got to stand for, and no amount of money, no deal, no compromise, nothing should be able to get in the way of core principles. Insofar as you embrace the deal mentality, let's make a deal. You're necessarily saying, well, I'm willing to compromise on what should be core principles. And insofar as we accept that, we are diminished as a nation. You may make a couple hundred thousand, couple hundred million dollars as a result of your compromise. But on a national level, we're losing things that are going to be difficult to replace.
We have a caller, Mary from Michigan. Good afternoon, Mary.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call. I am calling because I have become aware of a couple of things that just don't make sense to me. If the financial people in financial business are, I would think that they would be aware, as we are, that something is going to happen relatively soon, I would say. Mm-hmm. But I have two acquaintances. One used to work for Kraft, and they had a retirement, you know, that they drew on each month. And then I've got another friend who had a stock in H&R Block. And, you know, both people have gotten notice from their respective companies that are offering a buyout. And it just seems kind of strange that they would be. And I'm just wondering if anybody else out there is being offered a buyout on their pension, and wondering why the companies would be doing that now.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to say. I mean, it's difficult to answer that question. But one reason it crosses my mind is, depending on how much money they owe on the pension.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how soon these people are going to be eligible to collect their pensions.
Well, they're already collecting. Yeah.
If Kraft and or H&R Block, if they had reason to believe there was a serious bout of deflation headed our way, they'd understand that they're going to be paying all of their debts with larger dollars in the future. More expensive, more valuable dollars, all right? If the dollars deflate, they become more valuable. They have more purchasing power. That means that's good for your friend at Kraft and the other one from H&R Block. Their pensions would actually increase, even though the amount would stay the same. Say the pension was $2,000 a month. They'd still get $2,000, but it might buy $2,200 or $2,500 worth of goods as compared to what it purchases right now, if we go into deflation. So we can wonder whether or not Kraft and H&R Block, are they sitting back and saying, I think there's deflation coming, so if we can get out from under these pensions now, we can save ourselves some money. That's pure conjecture on my part.
Anything we would come up with, I think, would be conjecture, but it just, I'm just curious and would like to hear, you know, from anybody else out there that maybe has had, you know, an annuity or anything where they, you know, a retirement that they're drawing on, if they've been offered, and just wondering how widespread this might be.
I hear stories about that once in a while, but I don't know it to be a widespread phenomenon right now. It might be, but I haven't heard that it is.
Well, you hear a lot about people that are working and they force them into retirement, and I know it happened to several people at the U.S. Post Office that I've done business with, where they'll be offered, if you retire today, we'll pay you an extra $20,000 or $30,000, and so we can, save money for in the future. So I mean, I hear about those buyouts.
Both of these accounts are they've been drawing on them for a few years now. And that they're not buying them out that way, you know, trying to get them to retire early, so as a way of reducing their employees' numbers. But anyway, I just thought it was a curious phenomenon and wanted your input.
The Kraft and H&R Block, they may have done some actuarial calculations, and figured out that your friends are going to live for another 40 years. They said, we don't want to pay a pension that long.
Well, that was the speculation of the fellow that worked for Kraft.
Mm-hmm. Might be. We can buy them out right now, and we won't have to worry about paying that pension 20 years from now when this guy's still alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to say, though. It's you can only, you can speculate, but we can't answer the question for you.
Okay, well, I appreciate the input. I really do.
And we appreciate the call. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks
Bye-bye.
For listening. Bye-bye. All right. Where are we, Melody? Time
break
for a
time.
Break?
Yep.
All right. Let's do it. Let's take a break. We'll get some commercials, and Melody and I will be back in just a moment. And stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners, again, silver is difficult to come by for fairly quick delivery. You have 1 ounce. You have 1 ounce Canadian maple leaf silver. They are about a week out, so by the time your payment gets here, you won't notice any delays at all. And we still have a few kangaroos left, but Canadian maple leaves would be my first choice. So they are available. No word on silver eagles. And we certainly do have Morgan silver dollars that are still available. And it's constantly changing. So if you are ready to make a trade, give us a call at 1-800.
What does that tell you, that everything's constantly changing right now?
What is it supposed to tell me, Al?
Well, it's unstable.
Absolutely.
It suggests that there's going to be a dramatic change, that there may be a dramatic change in the near future. That's one of the implications on this, at least from my perspective. Everything could calm down a little bit, but things are jumping up, down, sideways.
I don't see any The availability is going to be tight, at least through the first of the year, is what I'm predicting. And if we have some sort of an event prior to that, it will be longer. Demand is strong, and these mints, these the Royal Canadian mints, and prices are low, and premiums are big.
Yeah.
And it's not retail premiums that are large. It's wholesale premiums that are large. We see it in $20 gold pieces. I'll recap on the comparison on that tomorrow, on the $20 gold pieces, to see where we're at from week to week, from the first of the year. And that'll show you prices are strong. Demand is there. Availability tight. So doesn't take much, folks. Don't delay. Give us a call. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. DGS for discount gold silver coins.com. And I just wanted to, Al and I were talking during the break in regards to Mary's call, and it has just been recent that there was a merger of the Kraft company into the Heinz company, and that was completed, I guess, in July on 2015. The merger was complete, and so they expanded. Another company was formed to handle the international snack brands, and so I'm sure that has a lot to do with the eliminating or the buyouts of the. Yes.
If you had the opportunity to take a buyout right now, or hang on to your pension as it currently exists, and what would you do?
I'd snatch it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I think I would too. Because, again, fundamental theme that we talk about on this program is the idea that we live at a time when there's too much debt. The debt is too great to be repaid. That means most of it won't be repaid, although we don't know what part will be repaid and what part won't. If you're holding debt instruments, they are vulnerable to being wiped out. You're vulnerable to suffering a loss. And therefore, you know, with the idea a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, if you had the opportunity and you're getting a reasonable offer on your pension, you get all that cash right now, and if you are sensible and invest it in something that is not subject to debt and being repudiated because you have nothing but a paper promise to pay, get something tangible, I think you could do yourself a lot of good over the course of however long your pension might last. I think you could. I'd take the deal if it was halfway reasonable, because I wouldn't count on Kraft or Heinz to be able to maintain that pension 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Who's to say? Yeah.
And I would also have to consider how much you have. You know, is it feasible to take it all? I mean, there you might want to do it in certain ways and so forth, because, you know, if you have a lot, if you have a huge pension, then you do have tax consequences and so forth. But I learned a long time ago, when you're looking to make an investment decision, you have to remove that tax consequence and penalty consequence from the equation. Because oftentimes those two things will keep you from doing something that you know is right. And I can't tell you how many times I have clients who say, yeah, you know what, I have my 401 and I know I'm going to lose 50 to 70% of it, but I don't want to pay the taxes and the penalty. Okay, so you're willing to lose 50 to 70% of your pension and to avoid a 30% tax. Okay, and so you have to remove that, and you have to go by what is suitable for each and every one of you. So, what's next, Al?
Oh, we've got an article here from ZeroHedge.com. 33,000 bankers fired. Pardon me?
Is that all?
It's like that old joke about lawyers at the bottom of the ocean. It's a good start. But ZeroHedge.com published an article entitled "UniCredit to Fire 10,000 as European Union Bank Pig Slip Pandemonium Continues." A little bit of lurid prose there. Deutsche Bank is set to fire some 23,000 people, or around a quarter of its workforce. The layoffs at Deutsche don't say much for Europe's economic recovery and may also suggest that, far from creating jobs, the persistence of zero interest rate policy has crimped margins, forcing banks to make up the difference by getting leaner. That's an interesting point about zero interest rate policy. How have conventional banks managed to remain profitable while the interest rates have been set down in the neighborhood of a quarter of a percent? I know the banks can get, there's additional charges and whatever, but it is interesting that the banks have, how have they survived for the last 6 years with the interest rates set down around close to zero?
Well, gee, Al, have you seen what they charge for credit card rates?
Well, I understand.
20 to 30%. 20 to 30%. I mean, it's criminal.
Well, they're making it up in places where they can't. Well, there's some, they squeeze you one place, it's like the old balloon analogy. You squeeze the balloon at this end, it bulges at the other end. That's just the way it works.
Yeah, but when you can borrow billions of dollars from the government,
well, I'm still,
you don't need to make 20%.
Well, maybe you don't, but it's still interesting. How do they manage to make their money at a time when the interest rate is supposedly down near zero? You would think that would be a big problem for banks, and yet we haven't heard many banks. I haven't heard any. I don't know. They may be complaining about it all the time, but I haven't heard them complaining about it. Have the banks been complaining about zero interest rate policy?
Well, of course not.
Well, it's like, why? You would think that's, you know, if I'm running
a business. Well, they're making a deal. Any money that they do have on loan, they don't have to pay any interest out, for number one.
Well,
so why, you know, so no.
Still, it's interesting.
Low interest rate benefits banks also.
Yeah. There's another article here from Reuters. Says UniCredit, Italy's biggest bank by assets, has 146,000 employees across 17 countries. UniCredit is planning to cut 10,000 jobs. Now, we just saw that Deutsche Bank is cutting 23,000. UniCredit is cutting 10,000, or 7% of its workforce, as it seeks to slash costs and boost profits. And here's Zero Hedge says, and there, ladies and gentlemen, is your European recovery. 33,000 pink slips in a single day, 10,000 from UniCredit and 23,000 from Deutsche Bank. The number of layoffs, from my perspective, the number of layoffs aren't absolutely fantastic or evidence that those two banks are about to collapse. The fact that two major banks have laid off several hundred thousand employees, they have several hundred thousand employees, and they've laid off 23,000, 33,000 altogether, doesn't strike me as, you know, extraordinary news. It's, you know, it's a difficult situation, that's for sure, but is this enough to collapse the banks? Is this enough to prove that global banking industry is in a state of chaos? Don't know. On the one hand, those layoffs constitute 33,000 more leaves in the breeze that indicate European banking, at least, is highly competitive and under significant stress, and they have to lay people off. Right? They're forced to because things are so difficult. That's one way of looking at it. You can look at it another way, though. On the other hand, those layoffs might instead indicate that Deutsche Bank and UniCredit are moving closer to a digital banking system that is both cashless and checkless. It's obvious that a banking system that uses less paper cash and perhaps no paper checks will have no less need for clerks and tellers to manage the flow of paper debt instruments. As banks become increasingly computerized and the monetary system becomes increasingly digitized, it just stands to reason the banks are going to need fewer and fewer employees. They'll need some technicians and systems analysts and programmers to keep the computers running. But other than that, the closest you're going to get to a bank might be an ATM, and even that won't probably exist. You'll just have a plastic card, and that'll be your bank. Where's your bank? It's in my hip pocket. Where they love it. I don't know. I don't know where they're located. I just have this card in my wallet. That's my bank. So, are the 33,000 bank layoffs, are they more likely due to financial stress that forces the layoffs? Is that the reason? Or are those 33,000 bank layoffs evidence of increased bank computerization, closer approach to a cashless society, and therefore diminishing need for employees? And therefore, these circumstances allow the layoffs. They're just saying, look, these people are redundant. We don't need them anymore. We're replacing them with computers. I'm inclined to think the fundamental reason is stress, of course, and most people are, but still, it's worth considering the possibility that at least part of the explanation for 33,000 layoffs is maybe we're just inching a little closer to a cashless society. Do you think that's possible, Melody, or do you think that's unreasonable?
I think it's all of the above. I think these banks are under certainly more stress. I mean, I do know they have these stress tests they have to perform. And, I mean, you know darn well they all lie, and they still are holding how many of these, you know, homes, these foreclosed homes on their books, you know, as toxic assets, in which many believe that was what really will still, you know, pull these housing market down. And the housing market really never, you know, they claim it's come back, but it hasn't. You know, I mean, that was, you had all these homes bought up by huge hedge funds, turned them into rentals. They created bonds off the rental income. And you know how difficult it is to keep, you know, homes, you know, up to date, and you know, that they don't get destroyed by the renters and so forth. So, you know, many in the real estate business believe this is, you know, the part that will really come down is, you know, maybe one of those black swans. I think, too, they're consolidating, you know, a lot of these larger banks, and with the low rates and programs that are available through government, they've been able to, you know, absorb some of these banks that were close to failure. So you don't hear about any banks failing. You just hear about mergers and so forth. And certainly we do have, you know, we know where, you know, let's push us closer to that cashless society. You know, hey, you know, chips are available, and hey, you don't have to care. You won't have to worry about getting hacked anymore. We'll just put this little chip in your hand and so forth. And, you know, and I think a lot of this hacking, I just question how much of it is really true. You know, they have to create a situation in order to get people fearful that, you know, they're going to have their accounts, you know, their money taken and so forth. And it has happened to a lot of people, but it makes you wonder, you know, is it all by design in order to push people into this direction and willingly open and accept something in times of true stress and situations. I mean, just like Al, we talked about, you know, all these retirement accounts and all that money sitting in there on in these accounts, you know, trillions and 16, and recently I read $20 trillion that are just sitting there. Do you really think that the government is allowed or will allow people to walk away with all that money sitting there when they're broke? They've robbed from every other account that we've had, Social Security and everything else. And now all of this money is sitting there just waiting.
Just ripe for the picking.
Just ripe for the picking. And, you know, under the right financial system, people will lose. Stock markets go back to 6,000 and people lose, you know, 70% of their, you know,
perceived
value when they get their statements, and the government says, well, you know what, you know, Social Security is broke, it's, you know, it's busted,
and why will it be broke, Melody?
But let's create this other program where we'll take care, yeah, we'll take care of your money, you'll never have to worry again, and you'll always be taken care of.
Why will Social Security go broke?
Well, because there's no money in there.
Yeah, I understand that, but who will
It's already
be blamed?
Been robbed.
Who will be blamed?
Who will be blamed?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody. It's going to be blamed.
I think they'll blame the baby boomers. I think they'll blame the baby boomers.
Absolutely.
There's too many of you people. My gosh, you're taking all of Social Security. The real responsible party, of course, are the ones who have mismanaged it from the beginning, taken the money out, used it for government, and just given them an IOU, given Social Security an IOU. They've got debt instruments. The debts can't be paid. Sooner or later, that will be apparent to all. When that happens, we're going to have a we're going to have a serious problem. Before we get to a serious problem, however, we're going to have a minor problem, and that is commercial announcements. Melody and I will be take a break here for a moment, and we will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article from the Washington Examiner entitled U.S. Drops to 16th on Economic Freedom List behind Canada, Chile. That's the headline. The United States ranked second in worldwide economic freedom as recently as 2000, but has since plummeted to 16th. According to a new report of World Economies, the Fraser Institute's annual report, Economic Freedom of the World, showed that the United States drop started in 2010, the second year of the Obama administration. The analysis uses 42 variables to create an economic freedom rating for 157 countries based on 1. Size of government. 2. Legal structure. 3. Security of property rights. 4. Access to sound money. 5. Freedom to trade internationally. And 6. Regulation of credit, labor, and business. It's interesting that one of their 42 variables is the mere size of government, right? And it's a virtual certainty that the way they calculate the size of government is that less government is better, and more government impairs people's freedoms, rights, and prosperity. It's a virtual certainty. That's the way they view the size of government. And one of the other six items that they referenced here that they take a look at is regulation of credit, labor, and business. Regulation as in government regulation. Legal structure, again, this is closely associated with your government. Security of property rights. Who's taking your property away except the government? Oh, you can lose property to the banks if you get into a mortgage problem and whatever. But in terms of having your property seized, who's going to do it besides the government? Right? Access to sound money. Ha, ha, ha. There's an interesting. We haven't had sound money in this country. We haven't had sound money in this country since 1968 when they stopped redeeming paper dollars with silver. Huh? Our Constitution mandates gold and silver as a tender in payment of debt. Do we have it? No, we don't. Freedom to trade internationally? Well, myself, I am more of a high tariff, do your business internally. I'm not concerned about freedom to trade internationally. I don't. In the end, that might be helpful for some countries. I'm sure it's helpful for some countries. But it's a, from my perspective, it's a detriment for others. The freedom to trade internationally has caused American labor to lose its tariff protections against cheap foreign labor. And the result is we've not only lost jobs, the jobs that remain have had a reduction in their wages, their hourly or annual wages, in order to get, as they move closer to reflect whatever the wages are in the competitive foreign countries. I look at the analysis. They said there's 42 variables. They listed half a dozen of the variables. You know, I'm looking at this, and it would be hard to imagine that the loss of freedom, right, that they're reporting, we've gone from number 2 to number 16 in the past, what, 7 years? No, 5. 2010, 5 years. We've fallen from, well, at least they say it's the principal part of the drop occurred in the last 5 years under the Obama administration. It said the U.S. fell in several areas, including legal and property rights and regulations. Top 10, Hong Kong, Singapore, New Zealand, Switzerland, United Arab Republics, Mauritius, Jordan, Ireland, Canada, with the United States Kingdom and Chile tied at number 10. It's interesting to me that the United Arab Emirates are freer than we are. Jordan is freer than we are. Muslim countries are actually freer than we are.
Economically.
Yeah, economically. But if you have that kind of economic freedom, I mean, much of the rest of it is followed. You can't lose any of your freedom and sit back and say, but our other freedom is still secure. When the government starts taking freedoms away, they start taking some, they're going to take more.
But I would think also that in some of those countries, like those Arab countries, freedom is defined differently than what we define freedom.
Well, the question is,
so
how
this
does
is economic
this
freedom.
Report, how does the Fraser Institute define freedom? And when they make the comparison,
economic
42 variables.
I would separate economic freedom, but anyway, go ahead.
It's just the land of the free. The United States of America is listed as 16th freest nation on earth. That, for me, is just shameful. You know, there was a time when you could believe this was the land of the free. You could brag about it. You could feel good about it. You could take pride in it. I know because I did. But now we can't. And it's not, the idea that we were even number 2 offends me. We've been number 1 for a century and a half. Maybe 200 years. Well, century and a half anyway. And now we're number 16th. To me, it's shameful. It's humiliating. It's an indictment of both the Republican and Democrat parties. It's also an indictment of the ignorance and apathy of the American people. Who can read that number? Who can see that number 16th on the list and claim to be proud of this country or their political party? Of themselves. We are losing it, and if we don't do something about it, if we don't recognize this problem and begin to do something dramatic to reverse this loss of freedom, next time they do one of these studies, we'll be lucky to be number 20. And as we go deeper and deeper into this, they said economic freedom, this is a quote from part of the article, it says economic freedom breeds prosperity, and economically free countries like Canada offer the highest quality of life, while the lowest ranked countries are usually burdened by oppressive regimes that limit the freedom and opportunity of their citizens. We are moving toward the low end of the spectrum. We've got a long ways to go. We're moving toward the low end of the spectrum, and everybody knows it. Everybody understands this country is becoming less and less free, and part of it's due to Obama, and part of it's due to Bush, and 9/11, and you can point your finger at 100 different responsible parties.
Going back 100 years,
who can you point to and say, "Hey, he's changing. He's making a change. We're trying to get back to freedom." Most people aren't even thinking about freedom. They're just thinking about, where can I make the most money? And it's not the best solution. It's important. Everybody wants to have more money, wants to earn more money. But too many people don't care about earning it. They just want to have it any way they can get it. If it's a government subsidy, fine. Theft, fine. Break in, rob a grocery store, fine. Get the money. Show me the money, get the money, have the money. You tell them, earn the money? They look at you like you're crazy. What are you talking about? And this is not a situation, we can make that criticism for the poor people in this country. Don't sit back and criticize the poor and say, look, they're more interested, they're willing to rob places or whatever. Yeah. But the same criticism applies to the rich. The super rich in this country, they just want to have it. They don't want to earn it. They just want to have it, and they get it by bribing congressmen and senators to pass laws to allow them to hold up the middle class. The poor people hold up the middle class with a gun. The super rich hold up the middle class with a law. And as a result, the middle class, which is the people who really pull the plow in this country, they're just disappearing. They're being predated upon. They are the productive element, by and large. They are a productive engine that drives this economy, and they're being whittled away. They're being eroded by predation from the rich at the top and predation by the poor at the bottom. What are we going to do when we run out of people who actually work for a living? Who's going to pay? Who's going to make the rich richer, and who's going to make the poor have something to eat? Something's got to be done. When we restore freedom, we're going to have to restore the middle class. And we're going to have to make an effort, a conscious effort, to restore that middle class. And much of that will be based on the idea that we're going to have to encourage self-employment. You know, I saw a report back when I was a kid, 25% of the people who had jobs in this country were self-employed. Huh? And I've said it a number of times, but in my memory, the country looked like it had a fresh coat of paint on it. It was bright and shiny and prosperous and hopeful. And now, I've seen the numbers and I can't remember what they are, but it's only a fraction of the people that have that are self-employed. I doubt if it's more than 5%. Why? Because government, in its infinite wisdom, has caused us to fill out more paperwork and more paperwork and more paperwork, and they are regulating us to a point where people who are capable of doing good work do not have sufficient background, intelligence, inclination to fill out all the damn government regulations and the paperwork and comply with everything government thinks is necessary to run the business. And the result is we have less of the self-employed, and the result of that is we have a smaller and smaller middle class. And sooner or later, there isn't going to be anybody in this country who actually works for a living, and what's going to happen to all the parasites then? And by parasites, super rich, poor, both parasitical. Neither one of them really supports themselves.
Here's some numbers for you. The U.S. has an estimated 10 million self-employed jobs as of 2013. So this is about a little old. That's 6.6% of all reported jobs, but down from a high of 7.2% in 2006. This was a report. Self-employment grew rapidly from 2001 to 2006. adding close to 1.8 million new jobs nationwide, but since the beginning of the recession, self-employed jobs declined by 936,000.
Yeah, but again, I'm
going back
to the old
mentality,
to the 50s and 60s, which they don't mention, where my recollection is that I was seeing statistics indicated 25% were self-employed.
Right, and now I'm telling you, now we're down to, 6%.
Yeah. Well, that's about what I was guessing. I was guessing somewhere around 5%, 6%. You got to let people do jobs without government breathing down their neck and say, oh, I mean, the income taxes, what a joke that is. How much does that cost the average employer, small businessman? How much time, money, effort does he spend trying to manage all the paperwork to keep the IRS happy? The guy should have, there should be some sort of a simplified internal revenue system where people running small businesses, right? If your gross is less than $1 million a year, maybe less than $500,000. But there's got to be a number where you can at least be free from most government regulation until you start making enough money where you could actually afford it. No? When you make over $500,000, all right, fine. Lay on the regulations. When you're just working out of your house and you're working with a pickup truck and maybe you got a little store where you repair shoes or something, you got to get off these people's backs. They're trying to support themselves. They're the best people this country has. And our government, in its infinite wisdom, is legislating them out of existence. They're the ones that are feeding the rest of us. I don't know. So, in any case, we're number 16, and it is nothing to brag about. It's better than being 17 or 20 or 50 or 155. But the momentum, going from number 2 in 20, what did he say, in 2000? I don't remember. Yeah, as of 2000. 15 years we've fallen from number 2 to number 16, and we should have never abandoned number 1. It's not good news.
Now you know why the slogan "Make America Great Again" has been so successful.
I agree. Trump gets it. He understands.
People like the slogan. I don't think people understand what's behind the slogan, but they like the slogan "Make America Great Again." People know we have these problems. People know we're not what we should be.
Do you know when Trump first toyed with the idea of running for president?
Long time ago.
1988, yeah. On the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah. What, 27 years ago, something like that? That's interesting. He's been laying in the bushes for quite a while, waiting for his opportunity. This is not a spur-of-the-moment situation. And of course, most people have forgotten that he actually ran for the White House in 2012. He was one of the candidates. He didn't do very well, but he ran 4 years ago, and people have already forgotten. So he's back, and we'll see where it goes now. I don't doubt there is much method to that man's madness. I think he knows what he's doing, and he's doing something that a lot of people didn't imagine was possible. But I think it's not just personality. I think maybe he's really been studying and trying to figure out a strategy that could get him elected. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.